From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today is Tuskegee Airmen Commemoration Day, the fourth Thursday in March, March 24th this year. More on that later in the program. First, in a time of heightened anxieties, where many kids are struggling with their mental health, special needs students and their parents have remained one of the most affected groups throughout the pandemic. For students with developmental disabilities, symptoms range widely and can affect everything from physical and motor skills, like cerebral palsy, to learning and processing, such as dyslexia and ADHD. It can also relate to speech and behavior. Under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, public schools are required to provide a quality and free education to students with disabilities. Most private schools also have some form of special education programming available. But in the pandemic, where resource scarcity, staff shortages, and remote learning became the norm, adolescents and children in programs, many of which were already underfunded, found themselves barely staying afloat, acting out in class, and struggling with their mental health. The overlap between students requiring behavioral intervention plans and those enrolled in special education programs is high. Statewide, nearly 18,000 students are eligible for special ed services under the eligibility of emotional disability alone. Beyond students, parents of children with developmental disabilities report higher levels of depression and often struggle financially when working to manage their own work with extra care needed for their children. With us to talk about the pandemic's effect on different learners and their families is Patty Booth Hodges, 7th grade special education teacher at Urbana Middle School. Patty, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Victoria Valentine, special education teacher at West Layden High School in Northlake, Illinois. She's also the recipient of the 2022 Special Education Teacher of the Year Award by the Illinois State Board of Education. Victoria, congratulations on that, and welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I also want to welcome Scott Woods, Rantoul City Schools 137 Superintendent. Scott, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Hey, thank you, Brian. I appreciate being here.
A bit later in our conversation, we'll be joined by Christina Berry. She's the parent of a child with special needs and a first grade teacher at Cicero School District 99. But for now, listeners, we invite you to join the conversation, especially if you're a parent, guardian, teacher, or just relative or friend of a special needs child. How has on or off remote learning affected the students in your life? Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Patty, can you begin by just sort of clarifying what does the broad category of special education cover, right? Because from my understanding, the range of different learners and varying needs, it reaches pretty far, pretty wide.
It is very, very broad, very deep. There are learners who have such challenges that they are in special schools. And then there are some students who are in like a single classroom for most of the day and learn more functional skills like taking care of themselves in daily life and, you know, basic academics, and then a whole spectrum of through students who may only have challenges, say, for instance, with math. And so they may have some support, some accommodations in a general education class. For instance, I have an instructional class where I have learners who have more challenges. And then I'm in a co-taught general education class. So I push in, they say, and provide special education services in the general education classroom.
So I want to go back to March 2020. The COVID situation is dire. We've just sort of learned about it, most of us anyway. Stay-at-home orders were being put in place. What were you feeling as a teacher, Patty? How did you take your teaching onto the internet?
Well, actually, at that point in time, I was living at my desk as soon as we went to the remote learning, because I was a TA at the time and in school to become a special education teacher. So, yeah, I spent the pandemic 18 hours a day at my desk, basically.
18 hours?
Online, what, pretty much the whole time. But my learners, actually, there were a few who did better in that situation without distraction, without the typical distraction. Others did much worse with the trying to be at home and trying to think like they're at school. Some had major difficulties, both with the technology and with the just the upset to the schedule and the different challenges that way. So it was a myriad of experiences. And one of the hardest things, being on Zoom, you can see them, but you can't really see them. And so we get a lot of cues, typically, I do anyway, a lot of cues from their facial expressions or their frustrations. And if you can't see those clearly, it's really hard. We also learned that there's an additional layer of substantial differences in the level of internet throughout our communities. And I'm sure that's something that's not unique here, but to everywhere. Mm.
Yeah. Well, Victoria Valentine, let me bring you into the conversation. Same question really to you. March 2020, what was it like going online?
I think just conceptualizing like the way that our classroom runs. So I'll tell you a little bit about what I do. I am on the more, my students have more severe needs and they require a lot of support in the classroom. So our functional curriculum builds in ideas like math, but we're looking at money. When we're looking at measurement, we're cooking. So all of these things that we do that are really hands-on, those functional skills, when we went remote, it was kind of like, okay, we started with packets and we were thinking of how we can embed all of the myriad of skills and topics and things that we cover in the class, build in their individual goals and needs, and then kind of take that and move it to an online setting. At first, we weren't actually planning to go remote and be synchronous, so all of us online at the same time. We were doing that multiple times a week, but then as we were seeing, you know, that the students weren't able to participate just with a packet, we moved to more, we're one of the classes that was online all day. So I'm in a high school setting and there were synchronous days and non-synchronous days. So students would work on their own or they would work as a class. There was no way that we could just have the students, okay, we're pushing you out and you're gonna go cook a recipe in your kitchen. We were online with them on video. All of my students had their cameras on and we were working on skills together. I mean, my entire house became my classroom. I was in the kitchen and we were washing our hands with the laptop on the side of the sink. And so many different things that we worked on were just live. So the shift was kind of crazy and shocked us all at first, just because we have so many functional skills embedded and all of those social emotional learning skills embedded. But then when we were hit with this wall of the screen, we were looking at the most important like base to build off of when we were going remote. So I think the base that we built off of was relationship building and functional skills in the setting that you're in the most, you know, your home setting. So that's where we started. And that's how it worked for us.
Superintendent Scott Woods, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You've been in education for 24 years. Before you were superintendent, you were a principal and also served as a district bilingual director. I've heard this idea out there that the pandemic really just amplified some existing problems with special education programs in some ways. Can you set a baseline for us? What were some of the biggest challenges that needed addressing in special education, even before this major change in how it was delivered?
Well, the biggest challenge is finding people like Victoria and Patty, who are highly qualified teachers to work with our special education students. That was the biggest challenge before the pandemic. And like other professions, the scarcity of highly qualified employees has continued, and especially in areas such as special ed. It's not the only area, but us being able to staff our schools adequately during the pandemic and at this point is probably the biggest challenge we face. For our special education students. I think they've been mentioned, but the shift into technology was difficult for all of our students. It was much more pronounced for some of our special education kids. We as a district, and I think other districts, we brought back our special education students first when we began transitioning back into in-person learning. And we transitioned those students back full time first to try and get them in the school setting. You know, we've learned that hopefully we never want to do this again, but that schools are much better for most kids in person. Patty said, you know, for some kids, this worked out better. And I would agree with that. I think we've learned too that some of our kids can do better in a hybrid situation. So before I talk too long, Brian, I will stop.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Well, let's look at some of the pandemic effects then. And we need to take a break in about 4 minutes here. But Victoria, when looking in our preparations for this, we reviewed a story from Chalkbeat, which looked at Chicago and found the numbers there for the 2019-2020 school year were pretty stark. For every 100 Chicago public school students with education plans during the 2019-2020 school year, so the first year of the pandemic, there were 25 missing reevaluations, 30 delayed initial evaluations, and 9 delayed annual reviews. This is, again, for these individualized education plans or programs, often abbreviated IEP. There were more than 10,000 incomplete evaluations and annual reviews. And the numbers got better the next year, 2020-2021, but I imagine it can be difficult to make up some of that ground. Can you talk about just what an IEP is and the importance of that, you know, sort of early process of evaluating a child with a suspected learning difference or disability?
Sure thing. So IEPs, individualized education plans or individualized education programs, are a legal document that guides the services and the goals that individuals with disabilities require and are working on in the school setting. So we write these, you know, often 40 plus page documents to reflect the specific needs of the learner. And the classrooms where the students are required by law to uphold these plans. So I can imagine, you know, as these plans are not being fully updated, that they're really reflecting the needs of the students in that time. And if you're looking back to early identification, students that I work with that have IEPs have been identified probably since they were, you know, in early childhood. So those plans have been developed and over time to reflect their current needs. So as we're looking at the pandemic and how it put a halt on that, I can imagine that the students just weren't able to receive their needs in that moment. They weren't able to receive the services that they were, you know, probably legally required to have in a school setting. So I can imagine just the effects of that. And then the effects of the pandemic changed a lot of the needs that the students were having too. So not having that in that legal document put a big damper on their students' education.
And did the, I mean, the how does the pandemic disrupt that sort of process? And can it be caught up, I guess, is the big question, right? Can you make up that ground?
What's tricky is that I think a lot of the needs have changed of the students that we work with. When we were focused more on academics in the past, now we see, because of all the time that they weren't able to have the social interaction, we're looking now more at these social emotional needs and how significant those are in affecting every other part of their day, like their ability to self-regulate and sit in a class for 45 minutes when they could before, to filter out those distractions. So I think what's the biggest challenge is just kind of looking at where students were before and completely reshaping those ideas of where we think the students should be now based on this academic break where we were just more focused on these social emotional being okay in the middle of a pandemic. So catching up with all of the documentation to reflect that is a huge challenge for educators and service providers everywhere.
Okay, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to resume our conversation about special education during the pandemic and how it's been affected and what's being done to try and address the needs of students as they were before and as they've changed during the pandemic. We're speaking with Patty Booth Hodges, who's a teacher at Urbana Middle School, special ed teacher in seventh grade at Urbana Middle School. Also Victoria Valentine, who's a special ed teacher at West Layton High School in Northlake, Illinois, and Superintendent Scott Woods of Rantoul City Schools 137 in Central Illinois. If you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, again, 800-222-9455. We're going to keep this conversation going after the break. Do stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about special ed and how it changed during the pandemic and what the new needs of the students are and whether a lot of students have been left behind or struggled during the pandemic, particularly in this special education context. We're talking about this with Patty Booth Hodges, seventh grade special ed teacher at Urbana Middle School, Victoria Valentine, special ed teacher at West Layton High School in Northlake, Illinois, and the 2022 Special Education Teacher of the Year from the Illinois State Board of Ed, and Superintendent Scott Woods of Rantoul City Schools. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. Patty, or actually Victoria, let me ask you this question. We talked a little bit before the break, but can you talk more about the social and emotional aspect of the classroom that's removed when students, you know, aren't present physically and how that's affected your students?
I think that teachers actually had a lot of control over the interactions that students had in this remote setting. You know, you can kick a student out of a meeting, you can mute them, you can turn off their camera, just because of the way that you interact in an online setting is just so not representative of the way that you interact with others in real life. So this monitoring kind of didn't help teach the appropriate interactions and the expected interactions that, you know, we have with our friends, or, you know, self-monitoring. So I have students who are diagnosed with autism and they have some of those repetitive behaviors like scripting. So they say a couple of the same words again and again. And I think a lot of the times parents who were supporting them might just, you know, mute their microphone or something like that. So we have been set back a lot in being able to self-monitor and to self-regulate. So now we are looking at the classroom and having to focus more on those skills again. I think that the online environment did provide a platform for us to be really supportive of each other and kind of celebrate each other's successes and encourage each other as we were trying our best. That was kind of one of our mottos as we were in the pandemic. But now that we're back in the classroom, it's a lot of just explaining and breaking down those social skills that are basic in managing your own emotions, helping others, and monitoring your own behavior.
Let's play a voicemail we got from one of our listeners. This is from Meredith.
My name is Meredith, and I'm calling from Brookfield, Illinois. I am a social worker, and I have watched the pandemic exacerbate the inequities that we knew existed prior. What I have learned in this process is that kids who are different learners with special needs or who just need different supports in the educational system, they and their families are tremendously resilient, but the educational system is failing them. We are not doing a good job of meeting them where they are at. And we knew this prior to the pandemic, but the pandemic has definitely brought to light what we need to do different. Now, that task lies with the educational system. Can we meet the bar? Can we raise the bar? Can we meet these learners where they are at and provide them with opportunities that they need to be successful outside the classroom, inside the classroom, in whatever creative and innovative ways that we can? Thanks.
Superintendent Scott Woods, Meredith works with students with disabilities. She's asking, can we raise the bar? I wonder if you're hearing this sentiment from teachers in your district, and how are you addressing the fallout from the pandemic in the five schools you oversee?
Sure, and I the answer to that is yes, we can raise the bar. I think that is the intent of every teacher, I hope. It's definitely my intent in our school district. But the bar needs to be raised for all of our students. And unlike other fields, you know, we are not going to move it dramatically through technology modern innovation. It still requires that interaction with the teacher on a regular basis. And so having high quality teachers and low class sizes is really the surefire way to start to meet the needs of all of our students.
And you were previously a bilingual director, I mentioned earlier. Can you talk about that, the intersection of people who are different learners and bilingual or English language learner students?
Sure. And that's a double challenge. On the other side, you have students with disabilities and IEPs who are also gifted children. So it fits into that almost as a twice exceptional category. The hardest thing working with bilingual students with special needs is also needing to provide those translation supports, preferably direct instruction in their home language until they're proficient in English, so that they don't lose ground on their academics because of also trying to learn English at the same time. It's an additional burden on school districts like mine, where not only do we need to find and hire highly qualified special education teachers, we also need to hire and find highly qualified special education teachers who can teach in two languages. And I know that we're not the only district in this situation. But our district has 30% of our students are bilingual. We have one special education teacher who is bilingual in the district. Now, that does not mean she's providing services to 30% of our kids, right? So those supports look like putting classroom assistants in the room who are bilingual. But trying to provide those same supports that we do in the school through Zoom during the pandemic was extremely difficult for our teachers and our bilingual assistants that are in our classrooms.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation now, and that's Christina Berry. She's the parent of a child with special needs and also a first grade teacher herself at Cicero School District 99. Christina, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for joining us in the middle of a school day today. We appreciate it.
I know. We're at lunch. Hi. I'm also a special ed teacher.
Excellent. So you're the parent of a son and a daughter. I understand your son, who's six, has special needs and sensory issues. What was starting school like for him, starting school in a pandemic like for him?
I have to bring this back, because we found out he was 3 years old when we found out he had some issues. And so he went to a therapeutic day school. And so he did therapy online for the first, while he was at the school. And it was awful. I cried every day. He wasn't medicated or anything yet, and he hated it. Hated going online and doing his therapy. And I would do OT and PT and speech. I would have to sit there and do that with him in order for it to get done. And even now he's in kindergarten, and being online for him, he got COVID and he had to stay home, and we couldn't even get him online to participate, because for him, he needs to manipulate. He needs to be in the situation. Someone needs to sit with him in order for him to pay attention. And sometimes that doesn't even help the situation. So yeah, it was, it was, It was difficult. It was extremely difficult. And it's sad because my son, his issues aren't as horrendous. I don't want to say horrendous, isn't as bad as some other students. And he had such a difficult time.
I think difficult to get any kindergartner on Zoom. I can tell you from my own personal experience. As a parent, how are you coping with the disruptions that have been brought on from the pandemic?
As a parent, I'm trying to just make sure that he's caught up. Making sure that he knows his letter sounds, his letter names, his sight words, because I do have the background of a teacher and I've taught kindergarten and I've taught those grades, I know what he needs to know. And I'm lucky in that sense. There's a lot of parents who don't know what I know and what their student needs to know in order to go on to the other grade, the next grade level. So I just try to work with him when I can. And in fact, that's hard too, because he goes to school a full day and then he doesn't want to do anything after school. So our weekends are pretty much academic based in order for him to, get the academic support that he needs.
Patty, I want to come back to you. Can you talk about masks and social distancing, physical distancing in school, in special education settings? How has that gone?
Well, in middle school, a mask. Oh my. So I will say that most of my students are making a very good effort. Okay. But then we have kids with like the speech and language who already talk softly or have either difficulty saying their words clearly or being understood for a variety of reasons. And the mask just exacerbates that. One of the things that one of the go-tos in middle school is if a child has difficulty with writing is to use computer technology so they can speak into the computer and do their writing that way. It's very effective typically, but if you already have speech and language difficulties and then you're putting a mask over that, then you have a child who can't just write the words, and now he's frustrated because, or she is frustrated because what they're saying is coming out completely different on the screen. So it just exacerbates the problem. Also just understanding that we all have to wear the mask is a big lift for all middle schoolers. And then even more so with the differing levels, that were differing abilities in special education.
Yeah, and I'm sure different levels of parental enthusiasm as well.
Yes, that too. Yeah. And you have things like, say a student with asthma, and if the room is warm and they're wearing a mask, that's really difficult. And then you're thinking in the back of your mind, and if this child gets COVID, that's really dangerous. So I want them protected. It's a balancing act every day.
Yeah, quite a challenge. Victoria, I'm going to run the risk of embarrassing you by mentioning a third time that you were Special Ed Teacher of the Year. But I mentioned that again because I want to ask what you think makes a good or a great special education teacher, right? Maybe on the spectrum of they're just individually unique. There's something special about them to the resources from the state, from the local school district, parental involvement. What makes a great special education teacher?
I think prioritizing your relationships with families is the way to be a good special education teacher. I think I have been, as I've been working to become a special education teacher, so this is my third year teaching, but prior to that, I made sure that I dipped my toes into every possible, area that includes individuals with disabilities. I looked at the advocacy piece, like autistic self-advocacy networks. I learned all about, their perspectives. I looked at special recreation. I worked in special recreation. I worked as a respite care provider. And the underlying thing is just the way that families and speaking up for yourself, that self-advocacy piece is at the core of everything that we do. So I think that's what guides me in the classroom and to support to support students in reaching their goals, the things that they care about for themselves, and to help families because their needs go beyond like what I'm teaching in the classroom, helping connect families to resources in the community. And speaking from my own experience as an individual who received special education services in high school, just kind of speaking from that to support families and to support students.
We're almost out of time, but Christina, you were recently quoted in the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, sharing your views on a new law, I should say, that would allow children to take up to 5 excused absences for mental or behavioral health. Can you talk about what that means to you as a parent?
You know, kids, I think adults don't give children enough credit. Kids are smart and they feel what we feel, and they feel it 10 times more just because they can't express themselves. And it is so important for them. They've been through so much. I mean, my son has not had a play date ever, and he's 6. And they've just been through so much and so much drama and everything that when they get upset, usually it comes out in behavior or anxiety, or you see it. And to have those mental health days be available to students who really are struggling is so important, because we all need mental health days, and we shouldn't neglect our children because they're kids. And you know, having that day, just some time to, you know, take a break and just breathe, and, you know, not be under rules, or the, you know, not having to follow rules at school, and just kind of relaxing, is really important for all of us. And I feel like everyone, pets, everyone just needs a mental health day because it's important.
Scott, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that law. Are families taking advantage of the policy?
I guess I'm going to assume that they are. Yeah. I have a slightly different view on it, in that there really wasn't anything preventing children from doing that to begin with. It's nice that the legislature made it official. But I think parents would just call in and say their kid was sick, and we would take it. But yeah, I think it's a great thing. I hear a lot more chatter about what about the mental health of our adults who work in schools. And I'm sure that's something that's going to be considered at some point also.
Interesting. Patty, do you have any closing thoughts on that? I wonder, do you see middle schoolers taking advantage of this idea of mental health, or is that something they're thinking more about in your classrooms? Briefly,
I want to applaud our district, because during the online learning on Wednesdays, we had specific SEL classes for like the whole team, for each team. They've hired lots of new support people for us. There will never be enough, but they have really stepped up with that, and we continue to have a specific class on Wednesday mornings. It's an SEL on team class where we have counselors come in and do specific lessons. And yes, they need additional days off.
Yeah.
You know, for 12-year-olds,
right,
their perception of the world is, even if their little the habitat dome is not the ideal situation, they still imagine that the rest of the world is intact, right? That the world is a safe place, that
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Patty Booth Hodges, Victoria Valentine, Scott Woods, and Christina Berry. Thank you so much for joining us today. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.